TNT Radio wants to know what you really think, because your opinion matters. At TNTRadio.live, upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's Soapbox. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio. James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Good morning if you're in the UK, and if you live elsewhere, then good afternoon or good evening. It's Monday, the 30th of January, 2023. So it's the final Monday of January. I hope you had a good weekend. Mine was spent doing all of my favorite things, so cooking, eating, drinking, and listening to music. Now, whenever the pressure is off and things are going well, I always take the opportunity to reflect. This is the third week of the Freeman Report, and I think I'm getting the hang of all these technical shenanigans and management of the show. So on reflection, I recognise the need to make sure that I don't forget the reasons why I started speaking out in the first place. It would be all too easy to slip into a routine that going through the motions, but this is not what I'm going to do. Just as I didn't have any ambition to be a politician, I never had any ambition to be the host of a radio show. But here we are. And like always, there's a reason why I ended up here. And also, I have a plan. So why did I contact TNT Radio to ask if they would give me my own show? Well, I wanted my own show so that I could reach out to as many of you as possible to spread the truth and undo the lies that we've been told by our governments. So over the weekend, I did some reflecting on what I should focus on in the next few weeks. As well as bringing you all the best guests talking about the issues that other stations cannot talk about, I recognise the fact that I need your help. I need your help to grow this show. Now, I promise that I will stay true to my values of telling you the unfiltered truth. But what I want in return is for you to go out and tell everybody you know to tune in to the show. In the coming weeks, I'll talk about how we can use our collective influence to help bring about change. Practical steps and campaigns that we can all engage in to make a difference. So spread the word that there's a new show on the radio called The Freeman Report that has all of the big name guests from the freedom movement. Now, if you can do that for me, then I will carry on doing what I'm doing. Right, okay, so I've got another fantastic lineup this week. This morning, first up, I have my old colleague from the European Parliament, Ben Habib. Now, Ben is a UK businessman and he's also a former Brexit Party MEP. And Ben has worked tirelessly since the UK left the EU to pressure the government into actually delivering on its promises. We'll be talking about the institutional corruption at the heart of the European beast. And we'll be asking, has the UK government actually delivered Brexit? And I also want to know what Ben's thoughts are on the problems with the UK economy and if it has anything to do with Brexit at all. And then finally, we'll be talking about the utter state of UK politics. Second up, I have Jim Ferguson. Now, Jim is also a businessman and an entrepreneur, and he's also a former parliamentary candidate for the Brexit Party. We'll be talking about why we both got into politics and what is wrong at the heart of British politics. We will talk about Reform UK and if it really is the alternative that the country desperately needs. We'll also be talking about British farming and also the terrible policies that have been inflicted on us all over the last 3 years. Right, okay. Now, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest or host that you'd like to hear on TNT Radio? Or perhaps you have a topic that you feel we should discuss? If so, then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website and help us make a difference on TNT Radio. Right, okay, stick with me because Dee Dee Denslow will be joining me in a moment. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report on TNT Radio.
Looping you in on the latest.
Alert straight to my phone.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Good morning, Darren. Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, I had a good weekend. It was a long weekend. It was quite a lot of traveling. It was very eventful at the event in Kegworth that I attended, but it was a good event, and it was good for TNT. A lot of people come up to me to say that they listen to TNT, that they listen to our shows. So that's really, really encouraging when we hear that. And hopefully, after I was quite vocal on stage, more people now will be tuning in to listen to people like me and you, James.
Amen to that, definitely. Right, Darren, you've got a headline here. So, Tory chairman fired over tax affairs. I think we know what this is about, but go ahead, Darren, and tell us all about it.
Yeah, you said you've got some. You've got Ben Habib coming up. You've got is it Jim Ferguson coming up? You're going to talk about UK politics. What's the problem with politics? They're all criminals. That's the problem with politics. Nadeem Zahawi being one of them, I reckon, found himself in hot water after paying a huge settlement over alleged tax avoidance. UK PM Rishi Sunak has sacked Nadeem Zahawi as a chairman of the Conservative Party over a tax affairs controversy. Zahawi had faced calls to resign after it came to light he settled a multi-million pound tax dispute with his Majesty's Revenue and Customs Department while he was serving as Chancellor of the Exchequer, a position in which you're responsible for the public's tax affairs. The matter revolved around Zahawi's apparent failure to properly declare profits that he earned from the sale of his stake in YouGov, the polling company he had co-founded. In a letter on Sunday, Sunak said that the revelation about the MP's personal financial arrangements and declarations come to light. He ordered an investigation into the matter and said that Zahawi undertook to cooperate fully with the inquiry. The findings showed that there had been a serious breach of the ministerial code. As a result, I have informed you of my decision to remove you from your position in His Majesty's government, Sunak told Zahawi in the letter. Zahawi himself admitted to his tax area, arguing it was careless and not deliberate. So there's your excuse now to everybody who's listening. Stop paying taxes and just go, I was careless and it was not deliberate, and you'll be fine. He claimed that when they created the company, he asked his father to help, who was in the process, took founder shares in the business to exchange for some capital. When HMRC disagreed about the exact allocation, Zahawi settled the matter and paid what they said was due, which was about £4.8 million, including a 30% penalty. And as I explained previously, James, I'm being harassed for £10 of council tax that I don't even know. So there's a difference in, you know, £4.8 million. All right, he has lost his job, but he wasn't going to. It's only because pressure's been put on. Me, £10, could potentially face jail for non-payment. It's rules for thee and rules for everybody else, it seems. And I refer back to my original comment that some of these people who are elected and are in Parliament, not just in the UK, but have positions of power politically across the world, a lot of these people are and can only be described as criminal, James.
Yeah, I'm going to use this opportunity to have my own little rant as well. So I went into London in October and November last year, and I went into, unwittingly, by the way, I thought I did my best to avoid it, but I did drive through the ultra low emission zone, apparently so. Now, I've moved house recently, so my car still was registered to the old address. Now, they sent me two tickets for £11, which I didn't get. So I managed to find out because they text me over Christmas. And anyway, I give them a call at the start of January. Guess how much they wanted? It was about over £400 for two £11 tickets. In the end, I had to settle both of them for £80 each, because they took on board my circumstances. But still, £160 for a £22 fine. Anyway, that's my little rant. Okay, so getting back to the story, £5 million, I think it's more than a £1 million fine. And, you know, like you said, if you were committing benefits fraud or anything like that, then you would probably be looking at a jail sentence or something similar. So the funny thing is, though, Nadeem actually seems to think that he's been treated unfairly. I don't know how he comes to that conclusion. He's apparently requested a 30-minute interview to give his side of the story, but this has been knocking about for over a year. So he's had plenty of time to come clean, and it seems that he's not done that. So I'm not really sure what to say there. I think the right thing has happened. To be honest with you, I think actually he should be. This is no small matter. I think, you know, his constituents should be asking whether he's suitable to be their MP. Yeah, I think, you know, the right outcome. It's a shame that it's taken Rishi Sunak so long. Apparently, he did know the fact that there was this issue when he gave him the job, which does call into question Rishi Sunak's judgment on the matter. What are your thoughts, Darren?
Yeah, well, Rishi Sunak judgment should definitely be called into question. And it's and I've got two questions that maybe that you can sort of approach with your next two guests is, one, Sunak needs to be investigated for his financial ties, whether directly or indirectly, with Moderna, particularly as he's just given them billions and billions and billions of taxpayers' money to set up a factory here to create vaccines that are harming people. Yeah, so I would like to have that question answered. And the other one is, why does Sunak not get any negative press in the UK media, any real negative press, when you think of how Liz Truss was treated for the 6 weeks since she was in power? When you consider that, one, he's a conservative, and two, he's got a lot of negative things going on in his parliament, as well as himself and the Moderna stuff. As for Zahawi, he'll probably get voted in by his constituents again. They'll turn up to the polling station. They'll see they've got an option of blue or red, and they'll tick the blue box because that's what they've always done. And hence, and therein, the problem with British politics and politics across the world. I'm glad that he's lost his job. Can he start investigating all the other people who aren't being mentioned for their financial crimes, who sit in the seats of power? It's ongoing. We're ruled over by crooks who don't pay taxes, which is fair enough because taxation is theft. But, you know, if we try to steal from the tax man, like you said, we get hit with extortionate fines and threats of being detained for periods of time until we decide that we do want to pay, James.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think, you know, most people will carry on voting blue because they don't want red, not because they want blue, because I think most Conservatives these days realize that, well, the Conservative Party, I mean, I don't think they're Conservative really, but they have made an absolute mess of everything they've touched. To be honest with you, I think the economy and the you know, the country would be better off if we'd had nobody at the wheel over the last 2 years and nothing had been done, because it seems that all of our problems originate from policy decisions from government. But yes, Darren, I definitely agree with you there. Rishi Sunak should definitely be investigated over his shares in Moderna. You know, I know that he's gone through a process whereby you, I forget the exact term of it, but you put them kind of out of reach or whatever. Yeah. But we should know. We should know, because these are not small amounts of money. Apparently it's $500 million. And he's making decisions in the UK about Moderna and its future and building big factories. And presumably there's lots of government subsidies going along with that. So definitely, I will definitely look into this story as the weeks go on. And we'll see if we can get some more guests to talk about it, because I definitely think this is something that will keep on coming up. Uh-huh. Right. Okay. Thank you very much, Darren. My pleasure, I will James. See you again in the second hour. Don't leave us. Don't leave us. Stay with us, because we've got Ben Habib coming up after the break.
You should hear what David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan are talking about.
Did you see actually intelligence reports from ISIS that they might be using this on a weapon?
No, it was mainstream media that reported that there was U.S. intelligence fears that ISIS were going to use Ebola specifically as a biological weapon. Which, you know, in a sense, they've kind of like admitted there that it can be used as a biological weapon, and which means that if it can be used as a biological weapon, then anyone can use it as a biological weapon. That to me was a little bit curious.
Yeah, no, and that's one of the worries we have. We know our security services, and we know what they're like, and they, because they think that they're always in the right, and they think everything goes when you're working for America or survival, that worries me. And again, having had experience in the military, false flag attacks, information ops and psyops are a fact. It's not fantasy, it's not conspiracy theory, dare I say, angry to make it, it's fact. We will put in an attack or our people aligned with us, etc., in order to make it look like the enemy in certain circumstances.
McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on TNT Radio.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Come on, speak up!
Speak. You must tell us.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back with me, James Freeman. This is the Freeman Report on TNT Radio. Right, it's Monday the 30th of January, and I've got a very special guest on with me next. I've got Ben Habib, who's a former colleague of mine. Hello, Ben.
Good morning, James.
Yeah, thank you for joining me on the show. I've got a bag full of questions for you. Hopefully we'll have time to get through them all. But yeah, thank you for joining me. Now,
a pleasure.
I don't want to spend the whole show talking about Brexit because I think people are still absolutely sick to the teeth about hearing about Brexit after the 4 years we had it shoved down our throats. However, it is still incredibly important to the British economy. So I think it's important that we do continue to cover the topic. Now, you were also a member of the European Parliament like me. Why did you get involved in that, Ben?
Well, I got involved really because Theresa May, having promised to deliver Brexit and then coming up with the cockamamie idea of her backstop, which is effectively the entire United Kingdom staying in the EU customs union until a suitable arrangement could be found for Northern Ireland, which may or may never have arisen. And then her inability to get that through Parliament and her inability generally to deliver got me triggered, you know, for want of a better expression. And someone was telling me about Nigel Farage's new Brexit party back in March 2019 and said, you know, you seem to be pretty exercised about the whole thing. Do you want to meet Nigel? And I thought, well, yeah, what the hell? It's better than just sitting around at home screaming at a television set. You know, let's get stuck in. So I met Nigel, found him to be, as I'm sure you did, James, incredibly affable, well-read, definitely not swivel-eyed right-wing lunatic like the mainstream media would have presented him. And he was on a mission to get Brexit across the line. And I said, you know, I'm with you. Tell me what I can do. And before I knew it, I was standing for the European Parliament.
Yeah, that's a very, very similar, identical story to me, actually. Excuse me. Yeah, it was never about immigration or anything like that. For me, I never followed UKIP. It was literally, I want the politicians who are who make the laws that I have to follow accountable to me. And then when the Brexit vote happened and it looked like Theresa May was going to try and give us anything but Brexit, that was a red line for me. Now, Ben, we did have some fun out there, didn't we? And one of the things we talked about early on when we were elected and we were out in Brussels was the EU institutional corruption. And what I'm talking about there is how they get MEPs on side and not questioning anything to do with the EU. And there are all sorts of little perks. Yeah. I mean, the salary, for example, for a start, is a lot more than UK politicians get. But tell us about some of these little perks that MEPs get that the public are probably not aware of.
Yeah, so I mean, I think the first thing to say is that the European Parliament is designed to give the appearance of a democratic institution within the EU, but actually it has very little authority. And, you know, it can't promote legislation. A lot of the legislation that's made is made without it even being consulted. And then the legislation that is brought forward to the European Parliament is in large part sewn up between the German and French factions within Parliament before it even gets to Parliament. So it's really a fig leaf of democracy. And the reason it exists, I think, is to give the impression that the Commission isn't acting effectively in an undemocratic way. And in order to garner the support of the MEPs, you know, that to avoid too many MEPs calling them out on what is this fig leaf of a democracy, as you rightly say, they dumbed them down through enormous largesse. And so just broadly speaking, the package was, if my memory serves me correctly, the package was a salary of €110,000 a year, which is about £20,000 more than an average MP would get. Then on top of that, you obviously got first-class travel backwards and forwards to Brussels as often as you wanted it, and to Strasbourg. And you had chauffeur-driven cars to ferry you around when you were there. So you felt like a sort of semi-god. And then on top of that, you had lots of expenses paid for you. And I think the most shocking bit of expenditure was, again, I'm going by memory, but the figure was about €24,000 a year just to run an office. And so you had your €110,000, you had your €24,000 a year to run an office, you had your expenses on top of that. You were getting the thick end of about €150,000 to €200,000, depending on how much you milked the system. And of course, this was designed, as I said at the outset, to dumb MEPs down. And with that largesse and that generosity coming from the EU, they were very unlikely to call it out. So that's how I think that basic undemocratic institution operated.
Yeah. Do you remember the little room? So what they do is for your like food and living expenses, there's a little room in the Parliament and there's always somebody there from, I think it's 7 a.m. till 7 p.m. And there's a little book that you go and sign. And every day that you sign that book, you get €360. Now, what was telling is if you were ever there on a Friday, now there's no business on a Friday. Everyone goes home on a Friday. But about 7 o'clock in the morning, a big line would form outside of that office. And it was all of the MPs or MEPs that had stayed an extra night so that they could get that 360 on a Friday morning before they get their planes back. So essentially, this is another, if you sign on 5 days a week, it's about another 1,600 or thereabouts euros a week. Now, most MEPs are staying in Airbnbs, costing them €200-€300 euros a week. So you do the maths. I mean, it's incredible, isn't it, Ben? I've got no other word for it apart from institutional corruption. Now, I think we should also say that we went out there to put ourselves out of a job. So I don't feel bad in any way at all. And I know there were people that were accusing us of having our nose in the trough or whatever, but actually we went out there to put a stop to all of this. So I think our integrity is intact. Right now, Ben, we had an awful lot of fun when we were out there. And Yeah. Yes, we did. Yes, definitely. We should point that out. Now, we had a lot of fun out there. We were very, very vocal. But, you know, I think we didn't end up with the deal that we wanted. Do you have any regrets or maybe not even regrets, but if you could go back and do that again, is there anything that you would do differently?
There's nothing I would personally do differently. You know, we all called out the deal for being an awful deal. And I wish the deal had not passed the British Parliament. But the reality is that there had been 3 years of constitutional turmoil in the United Kingdom. Boris Johnson brought this deal forward in the autumn of 2019. He then won a thumping general election victory on the back of this deal. And remember, he said to the extent, he said certainly privately, and I think even openly, to the extent that there are any defects in this deal, you know, we'll fix them afterwards. And his Tory party manifesto for that election says clearly on page 5 that the country would leave the EU as one United Kingdom, that we would take back control of our laws, our borders, our cash and our fishing. You know, so the political promise that he made was worthy of the support and backing of the Brexit Party. And that was, as I said earlier, you know, within the context of 3 years of constitutional turmoil and then a thumping endorsement by the British people. We mustn't forget that. The British people backed Boris Johnson to get Brexit done. And I think it would have been very churlish for the Brexit Party to then vote the deal down. Every bone in my body believe Boris wouldn't deliver, that the promises he made in the manifesto would be trumped by his ineptitude. And I'd already judged him to be inept because he'd made promises on which he'd gone back. But can you imagine what it would have been like, James, if the Brexit Party had voted against Brexit after 3 years of constitutional crisis, after the British people had voted Boris Johnson in with a thumping majority? It would have looked like sour grapes. And you might also recall, just going back to that point about MEPs being sort of semi-bribed into submission, Daniel Hannan, who was then a Tory party MEP, wrote an article in the Sunday Telegraph accusing the Brexit Party MEPs of being unduly wed to the EU. And I'm sure the Tories would have absolutely jumped all over us if we had voted against the deal, and they would have dragged our reputation through the media, accusing us of all sorts of falsities. But the one thing I would have changed about the way the Brexit Party conducted itself, and it's something over which you and I had no control, was the standing down of the 317 candidates in the general election. When we stood down those 317 candidates in Tory seats, and we stood them down indiscriminately, in the sense that we stood down candidates we had, you know, standing against ardent Remainers in the Tory party. When we stood them down, we gave the election to Boris Johnson, and in giving him that thumping majority, we removed from him any scrutiny, and that was the election, I think, in which the Brexit Party, if it had held firm and had gone through to the final hurdle, had a really sporting chance of making political history and getting 4 or 5 MPs. And if we'd got 4 or 5 MPs in Parliament then, we would have been in a very strong position to influence the Tory party to genuinely deliver Brexit. But sadly, we stood down, we gave Boris Johnson the 80-seat majority he then got, and he basically squandered that majority, stuck by the deal that he'd signed, which is awful, didn't deliver the promises on page 5 of the manifesto, and we are where we are today.
We certainly are where we are. And we're just going to take a quick break now, Ben, but stick with me, because afterwards I'd like to talk about some of the problems we've got and whether any of Brexit has actually been delivered yet. So stick with me. I'm going to take a short break now, and we'll be back in a second.
TNT Radio News.
Hi, everybody.
So many crazy news stories going on right now.
Now, the news.
Go. Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines.
Novak Djokovic is just one Grand Slam win away from cementing himself as the greatest tennis player to have ever lived after claiming his 22nd trophy in Australia. Russia's accused Ukraine and its Western sponsors of committing war crimes in the Donbas region after Kyiv's forces blew up a civilian hospital, killing 14 people. And drones have been used to blow up a convoy of trucks transporting food across the border that splits Syria and Iraq.
Did you know there are many ways you can listen to TNT Radio? Why not stream us direct from our website on your desktop, tablet, or mobile device? Or download our app from the App Store? We even stream live on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
Welcome back with me, James Freeman. This is the Freeman Report, and on the line I've got Ben Habib, my old colleague from the European Parliament. Hello, Ben.
Hi, James.
Right. Okay. Before the break, we were talking about the reasons we got involved with Brexit and became MEPs. And we talked a little bit about the European Union and some of the institutional corruption there. What I want to talk about now, Ben, is, I guess, firstly, the question, has Brexit been delivered?
Absolutely not. It has not been delivered. And I can explain why very simply. When we voted on the form in 2016, whether or not we wish to leave, the question posed was, do you want the United Kingdom to leave the EU? Well, the United Kingdom hasn't left the EU. Northern Ireland, and we have two court rulings now to prove my point, Northern Ireland has been left behind to a very significant extent. Significant parts, fundamental parts of the Acts of Union, which created the United Kingdom, have been subjugated and attested to by, you know, the subjugation has been attested to by these court rulings. So there can be no basis on which anyone can claim that Brexit has been done. Part of the UK is subject to laws made in a foreign power and adjudicated by a foreign court. And that is entirely unacceptable and a fundamental breach of the promise that Boris Johnson made to get Brexit done. Brexit has not been done. Anyone who's seeking to judge Brexit on the basis of the deal that Boris Johnson did and then didn't correct is misjudging Brexit. It hasn't been done, and the fight has to continue.
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, I don't really want to sort of keep on focusing back on Brexit. But, you know, one of the things that I'll be talking about on this show, and I've got Catherine McBride on a Friday, is debunking some of the lies that are coming out now. Obviously, we've had a torrid time with COVID. Well, actually, it's not a torrid time with COVID. We've had a torrid time from the government's response to the virus over the last... Yeah, exactly. You know, they've made a right mess of the economy, but it seems now that, you know, the Remainers want to blame it all on Brexit. So we will be doing a lot of that debunking on the show here over the next few weeks. But Ben, what do you make of the state of the British economy at the moment and also the Conservative Party's handling of the economy?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, Brexit and the handling of the economy are very much linked. And this is why, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to leave the EU was so that we could ditch this incredibly bureaucratic organization and all the laws and regulations that it made. If you are the European Commission, forgive me, I'm just going to labor this point a bit because I think it's very important. If you are the European Commission, you exist purely to make laws. That's all you do. And so all they did was make laws. And they made the laws largely for the benefit of the EU, not for the benefit of member states, and certainly not for the benefit of the United Kingdom. So we were fettered with a whole load of legal morass, which did not put British national interest first. And a key component of Brexit was to ditch those laws, to chart an independent path to the United Kingdom with the British national interest in mind, and only the British national interest in mind. And the Tory party has completely shirked that. Partly, I think, because of the Northern Ireland Protocol and a fear of diverging, of Great Britain, as distinct from the United Kingdom, diverging from the EU and therefore making it even clearer that Northern Ireland has been left behind. Partly for that reason, but significantly, Because when we left, Boris Johnson deal also included a level playing field obligation. So we're stuck, hitched at the hip to the EU on key policy areas, including state aid, competition, employment, and the environment. We actually genuinely cannot do what's right for the UK under that trade deal that he signed. So Brexit was a vote to take back control, to do things with the British national interest first, and they haven't done that. And it's no surprise, therefore, James, that the British economy is suffering, because we're not making decisions with the British national interest at heart. What we should be doing, having left the EU, is deregulating. And remember, every regulation has a cost associated with it. When you regulate a business, you foist extra costs onto it. If labels have to tell you how many calories are in a particular jar of jam, there's a cost associated with that label. What we need to do is reduce the regulatory burden, turbocharge British industry, and also cut taxes. And this is where the Tory government's been so short-sighted. It hasn't taken advantage of any of the opportunities that Brexit did offer, notwithstanding the level playing field and being tethered, you know, to the EU through it and by the Northern Ireland Protocol. It hasn't made any attempt to take advantage of those liberties. So it doesn't surprise me at all that we are suffering really badly as an economy. We're almost in the worst of all worlds. We're kind of technically out of the EU, but unable to do our own thing. And
so what do you make?
Superimposed on all
sorry,
of that,
go on, Ben.
Yeah, sorry. So I was just going to say, superimposed on all is a Tory party that actually believes in taxing, borrowing, and spending. It's not traditional conservative. It thinks it knows better than the people. It thinks it knows it can spend our money better than we can. That's why it taxes us. And it hangs its coat falsely on the hanger that, you know, cutting taxes now would be inflationary. That's utter nonsense. With this surge in inflation raised its ugly head while taxes were high, while the government borrowing was massive. So the notion that keeping taxes high is going to control inflation is wrong. What we need to do is to cut taxes, liberate British people, allow them to make the decisions that they wish to make with their money, and fundamentally make it pay to work. Right now, it simply doesn't pay to work, and the economy will not motor until people are incentivized to go out there and earn a shilling knowing they can keep their shilling. And the notion that the government knows how to spend our money better than we do is a fundamentally flawed one. All the government does is waste money.
Oh, there's a lot of truth in what you're saying there, Ben. I think the government has realized now that there's an awful lot of people my age and above in their 50s that have just left. They've just left the economy because there's no incentive for them to work. Now, Ben, Rishi Sunak and Jeremy Hunt, two, I think most people would agree, are globalists. You know, they are part of the globalist kind of ideology. What do you make of how all of this has happened with Liz Truss and how we've ended up with Rishi Sunak, who nobody has voted for?
Yeah, well, I mean, you're absolutely right to say they're globalists. I mean, whether or not there's a conspiracy going on at a global level is something I can't comment on. In a sense, I think our politicians are too incompetent to organize a conspiracy at that level. But there's no doubt about one thing, and that is that Boris Johnson, Rishi Sunak, and others they gain their self-validation, not from the electorate who elected them to get, you know, to represent them. They gain their self-validation through their international peer group. They love hobnobbing with other heads of states, Trudeau, Biden, Zelensky. I mean, Boris Johnson just can't help himself. He's always trotting off to Ukraine, you know, for a photo shoot with Zelensky. And through this desire to be validated on the international stage, undoubtedly policies are being made ostensibly, and I say ostensibly, advisedly, because I'm not sure at all that these policies are for the benefit of the globe either, but ostensibly at a global level for the benefit of the globe. And again, not putting British interests first. So, you know, this drive to net zero by 2050, which is going to cost the British Exchequer £1.4 trillion at a time that borrowing is already through the roof, at a time that people already can't afford to pay their bills, is a complete travesty. We need to be taking our foot off that pedal and allowing the British consumer, the British earner to, you know, regain their footing. And so there's no doubt that, you know, the influence of the World Economic Forum, the UN, the WHO, the World Bank, the IMF, you know, it's greater now than it's ever been in our lives. And it's supported and promoted by people like Boris Johnson, Sunak, Biden, Trudeau, Ardern until she left. We'll wait and see what her successor is like. But, you know, this is happening globally, and it's not good at a national level. And democracies are feeling the strain, and the electorate are feeling the pain, and they will fight back. And we will see an absolute obliteration, rightly so, of the Tory party at the next election because of the way they've turned their back on the electorate.
Ben, I'm really glad you brought up net zero. We're going to take a very quick break now, but when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about that. But also, you know, this problem with democracy, nobody ever voted for net zero. So it seems crazy to me that all of the parties are signed up to it. Right, stick with us. We'll be back in a second after this short break.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Only 19% of Americans have favorable view of Republican House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy. So says the headline of a recent Mediaite story on a new CNN poll. Well, what the headline did not mention is that only 21% of Americans have a favorable view of the top Democrat in the House, Hakeem Jeffries. That was eventually mentioned five paragraphs into the story. Of course, there's little difference between a pitiful 19% approval and 21% approval. In fact, the poll isn't great news for either party. Just 27% say they think Republican leaders in the House have had the right priorities so far, while 59% disapprove of the way Democrat leaders in the Congress are handling their jobs. Also, 70% say things in the country are going in the wrong direction, with 58% of Dems feeling that way, a 16-point rise from last month. And when it comes to issues that Americans care about the most, I couldn't find the word abortion mentioned. Not even once. Well, maybe that should have been the Mediaite headline. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Think tsunamis only happen somewhere else? Think again. Tsunamis happen when ocean water is displaced by an earthquake or other large undersea disturbance. Plan to act. If you are near the coast and feel a quake, hear the ocean roar, or see the water recede significantly, a tsunami may be approaching. Get moving. Go inland and up to safety. For more information, visit tsunami.gov.
The Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back with me, James Freeman. This is the Freeman Report, and on the line I have my old colleague, Ben Habib. Now, before the break, we were talking about net zero. Now, I've got a real issue with this because nobody actually ever put this in their sort of election manifesto. And we're now seeing another big policy coming down the road. And I noticed there was a job advert yesterday over the weekend for head of central bank digital currencies. Now, I don't really want to get into the rights and wrongs of both of these policies, but I think, you know, they're pretty fundamental things that are going to have a huge impact on people's lives. And I'm really concerned that, you know, democracy is not functioning because nobody is voting for these things. What are your thoughts on this in terms of sort of the way that our democracy is going, Ben?
Well, I mean, you know, at a fundamental level, you know, I was born in very recessionary times, and my father used to say, you know, reuse, reduce and recycle about everything. And that was just a basic economic common sense back, you know, back in the 70s. And absolutely, we should be taking more care about the way we live. But this political project of getting the country, and by the way, the United Kingdom produces less than 1% of global carbon emissions, this drive towards net zero, incessant drive, political project, it's not an economic one, it's a political ideology that's pervading the drive of it, by 2050 at a cost of £1.4 trillion. So that's £50 billion a year. Remember, they defenestrated Liz Truss because she had a gap in the budget of 45 billion. If she ditched net zero, she would have made all of that back in one move. Net zero is a bit like the euro. You know, it's a political project, which is perhaps, you know, assuages the desire for politicians to be seen to be doing the right thing. But it is economically supremely damaging. And they've got to start taking their foot off that pedal. You know, I mean, I don't know how else to put it. You know, the notion that we should all be retrofitting our houses at billions of pounds a year, changing our boilers, moving away from gas, which, by the way, is not such a polluting fuel. And if we could get our supply line sorted out, would not be expensive. You know, we've got oodles of gas in the United Kingdom, in the North Sea, even without fracking, you know, which we should be taking advantage of. We should be aiming for energy independence, sure, but not for net zero. This idea that you can economically grow through net zero is just daft as brushes when you look at the bill. So we definitely have to move away from net zero. On the digital currency thing, I mean, I agree with you. It is a worrying step because a digital currency is not the same as Bitcoin. You know, people make the mistake of thinking, oh, this is a bit like Bitcoin. We'll all be liberated through it. This is a government-controlled central bank digital currency. It will allow the government, it will, first of all, prevent you from being able to take cash out of banks. So, you know, if banks start offering negative interest rates, your reaction as a depositor will not allow you to take cash out and put it under your mattress, if you like, to avoid paying the bank to hold your cash. Once we have a CBDC, the central bank will control every penny you ostensibly own. And again, I use the word ostensible advisedly. And it will be able to micromanage, if it wanted to, the way you spend. It could put in extra costs if you want to buy housing because housing prices are going too high. Or if it thought consumer spending was rising too much, it could target that specifically. If it thought you were spending your money ill-advisedly, it could conceivably start targeting you personally. It is a move towards much, much greater government control. Now, I'm beginning to sound like a bit like a conspiracy theorist, and it is quite possible that it won't be used that way, that CBDCs will just be another step towards technological advancement, which is, those who promote it just see it like that, a technological advancement, streamlining of the economy and ability to transact more easily. And maybe that's what it will be. But without a shadow of a doubt, it does give government the control to do the kinds of things that I've just described. And we do know governments are prepared and able to strip our civil liberties away from us when they so choose, as evidenced by lockdowns. So I think we've got to be very suspicious of CBDCs. We've got to watch how they're being introduced and the rules and regulations associated with them. And then just going back to net zero, we've just got to take our foot off that pedal at the moment. It is not good for the economy. It's not good for the working and middle classes. And the government needs to get its act together on it.
Yeah, some very, very wise words there, Ben, definitely. Yeah, I think the worrying thing for me is the lack of transparency. Most of the British population haven't got a clue that within the next sort of 2 to 3 years, maybe even sooner, that they could be using CBDCs. Now, I think I liked the phrase you used there. You said daft as brushes. And I think, you know, that for me hits the nail on the head, because this whole thing with net zero, right, it's kind of, there's lots of things that we've got to do. I was reading this morning that we haven't even got enough gas installers or plumbers in the UK to be able to retrofit or change all of these gas boilers. And then when you look at the electric vehicle infrastructure, you think, how the hell, you know, we're talking about potential blackouts in the UK this winter. So how in 6 years, 7 years time, we're going to stop selling combustion engine cars. How the hell are we going to do that? There just seems to be no forward planning for these crazy policies they've got.
Yeah, so let me give you another stat. You know, I run a commercial property company. That's what my daytime job is. And net zero in the commercial property world is being delivered through energy performance certificate requirements. So by 2027, every commercial property in the United Kingdom has to comply with EPC rating of C. Okay, 67%, that's a legal requirement. 67% of commercial property in the United Kingdom does not comply. Okay. By 2030, every commercial building in the UK will have to comply with an EPC rating of B or better. 80% of buildings in this country do not comply. What do you think that's going to do to the cost of investment in buildings? It's going to go through the roof at a time when really we should be operating cost effectively, counting pennies to avoid this inflationary surge that Sunak wishes to get control of. Why do you think, I mean, this is inflationary. When we're all going to be spending loads of money to retrofit our houses, to bring commercial property up to standard, rents are going to go up. They have to go up. And if rents go up, you've got inbuilt inflation. So when the government on the one hand is saying they're not going to cut taxes because they've got to fight inflation, on the other hand, you've got to spend a fortune retrofitting your houses for no obvious benefit. It just drives you nutty. Sorry, forgive me. I've slightly lost for words. It's just absurd what the government is up to.
No, this is great, Ben, because I think your frustration says it all, really, in terms of where we are with British politics. Now, obviously, I think we both agree that the Tories are going to get obliterated at the next election. I think that's pretty, unless something pretty drastic happens, I think that is a foregone conclusion. And to be honest with you, even though I'm very, very nervous about a Labour government, I think they deserve it. What are your thoughts on the Labour government? Do you think they are ready for power? You know, what are you worried about, if you are worried about anything there?
Okay, there's one fundamental thing that we must all say as we go into this next election, because the Tories are going to fight the next election as they've done the last few elections, saying, we recognise we're bad, but the other people are even worse than we are. That's going to be their line. No matter how bad we are, Labour's going to be worse. And they're probably right. But, and this is the big but, which we must not lose sight of, failure, utter failure by the Tory party must not be rewarded with incumbency. They need to be obliterated, because if they are returned to office for fear of what Labour is like, all we will be doing is rewarding their bad behavior and inculcating their bad habits. The only right thing to do now is to get rid of the Tories out of government. It's almost academic what Labour is like. You've got to get rid of the Tories. And Labour will be worse. Labour's response, for example, to Brexit is to take us into closer cooperation with the EU, for which you can read dynamic alignment with EU laws. That means as the EU makes regulations, we will pass the same regulations, even though we won't be part of the single market or customs union. We will follow the EU for fear of diverging. And it'll also, if you read carefully what David Lammy and other people have been saying, it'll also take us into security arrangements with the EU. So we're going to be joining permanent structured cooperation, which is their equivalent to NATO. We'll no doubt end up contributing to military research and military infrastructure in Europe. These are all very bad developments that would come under a Labour government. What we need to do, James, is we need a sensible centre-right party around which people can coalesce and make sure we get the 15 to 20 seats, you know, that would be required to ensure that if it's a Labour government or a Tory government, you have the ability to swing the debate in Westminster and prevent the stupidity that both these parties are capable of and have perpetrated on the British electorate over the last 25 years. You know, we need a toehold in Parliament to keep these people straight.
I absolutely agree with you on that. And actually, my next guest is a former parliamentary candidate for the Brexit Party. So we'll be talking actually about the Brexit Party and what's now called Reform UK in the next hour. But finally, Ben, we've got a couple of minutes left. I wonder if you could just comment on some of the corruption that we're seeing in the Conservative Party. So we've just obviously heard that Nadeem Zahawi has been fired. What do you make of all of this?
Well, it's staggering to me that Nadeem Zahawi could have been in office for 5 seconds flat after it became apparent that he had been fined 30%, which is the maximum penalty HMRC can levy on anyone. HMRC are reluctant, by the way, to fine people because they want to work in cooperation with taxpayers so that they can get paid. You know, issuing penalties is not it's not the way to get paid. The way to get paid is to do it in cooperation with taxpayers, even when they find that something has gone wrong. So the fact that they levied a 30% penalty on Zahawi says to me that Zahawi was up to absolutely no good. And that Rishi Sunak needed an independent ethics advisor to tell him that Zahawi needed to be sacked is, again, it boggles the mind. Zahawi should have been out of the door in flat 5 seconds flat, as I say. And that is symptomatic of the current Tory government. And there is no shortage of examples of these. Michelle Moan, you know, and a whole load of other things I could go on about. The Tory government is out of ideas, it's out of ideology, and it's basically now steeped in self-interest and cronyism. It has to go.
It certainly does, Ben. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I hope you'll come back on again in the future at some point. So thank you, Ben Habib. Right now, stick around for the second hour because I've got Jim Ferguson who'll be joining me and we'll be talking more about British politics and also about Reform UK. We'll be back in just a second.